Welcome to the Latinos in Planning Division's Plan Dulce podcast. This podcast is where we talk to Latinos and Latina planners about urban planning topics unfolding in the Latino communities across the country. And today, we welcome Ana Maria Lasso. She's the director of the California Department of General Services. She was previously the director of General Services for the Los Angeles Exposition Park. And that position, she was appointed by our governor, Edmund Brown, in April of 2014. Ana Lasso leads the General Services Department, which serves as business manager for the state of California with over 3,500 employees and a budget of over $1 billion. They serve the public by providing a variety of services to the state agencies through procurement, acquisitions, solutions, creative real estate management, design innovation, environmentally friendly transportation, and funding for construction of state schools. Ana holds a master's in city planning and urban design certificate from the Massachusetts Institute of Technology and has a dual bachelor from the University of California, Los Angeles. Her commitment to the underserved communities is undeniably been her, and she has been recognized through awards such as the 2021 Mujeres Cambiando el Mundo Award and the Regional Hispanic Institute in 2020. And Ana resides in Whittier with her husband, Jose Hernandez Vicente, and their two children, Alba Marina and Diego Jose, and their two dogs. So welcome, Ana.
Thank you, Ana. That you make me sound just fantastic. Well, thank you for that. just so happy to be here, as I mentioned earlier, with all of you. And what a great opportunity to highlight what Latinos and Latinas and are doing in the community of urban planning, the built environment, and urban design. So happy to be here. So I'll tell you a little bit more about myself. You know, I'm a firm believer in public service, and I think that stems from growing up in South Los Angeles and the Southeast cities, where I truly say I hail from the Southeast cities, specifically Huntington Park, where my parents still reside. And I think my call to public service was a combination of growing up in those environments that are greatly deprived of open space and opportunities for children to have safe spaces to play, amenities and programs that we can tap into. And I've had the privilege to call Heidi a friend for a long time. We both are true Bruins and actually probably share a major in common. And we were both, and I could say this with certainty because I sent that picture to you, Heidi, are disciples of a great professor who really paved the way and opened our eyes to how we can combine our love for our communities and fervent belief in public service and a major call to urban planning. I think we started taking classes as undergrads and we both pursued that as a master's. I have worked in the private sector, and I will not say that I won't return to that one day, but I believe in public service because having a seat at the table where decisions are made that influence macro decisions for our communities, cities, state, regions, nation is very important for me. So again, thank you for having me here, and let's take it away. As you mentioned, I've been with the state almost 10 years. I spent 8 fantastic years at Exposition Park, really what I would call in the renaissance of Exposition Park. Exposition Park was my only backyard park when I was living in South Los Angeles until the age of 10. And it was that particular park really in 1984 when I saw the world descend on Los Angeles in the 1984 Summer Olympics that opened my eyes to what it meant for these international events, ephemeral events that come into cities to change the economic makeup, to see multiculturalism happen at my doorstep, something I had never seen before. And I would have never thought that many years in the future, I would be the general manager at the park right at the time that we saw the development of the LA Football Club. Well, now it's a different name for the stadium, but the LA Football Club Stadium, the negotiating the Lucas Museum of Narrative Art, and really helping the park with its 25-year long-term master plan to help navigate the $1 billion of construction that are being invested between the University of Southern California that renovated the Coliseum. But not only that, they ensured that they were investing in the local community by creating jobs. The Natural History Museum, which is the LA County Natural History Museum, has an expansion going on. And of course, the California Science Center and the California African American Museum also have very large public works projects with really strong project labor agreements, ensuring that those jobs stay here in the community. And that really opened the door, I suppose, and I say I suppose because I leave that to the governor's appointments desk to invite me to apply and serve the Newsom administration as the director of DGS. So that in some kind of gives you a little run of my last 10 years working in state government.
Yeah, and you know, Anna, thank you for just being so open and candid. I think for a lot of our listeners, your story, your origin story is so inspirational because there's, as you mentioned, there's many of us that maybe grew up in neighborhoods where we had access to these amenities, or we saw other communities where we thought, wow, they have a nice park and they have a bigger park. And why is that, right? So you started off by mentioning some of the areas that you lived in, where you grew up, and how that has maybe informed this perspective that you bring to the table, which you cleverly mentioned, having a seat at the table is so critical, right? And just for some of our listeners, and as we're going through our conversation today, I would love to know, how do you explain to your family what you do?
Well, that's a great question.
Yeah, as an urban planner, right? Because
right.
MIT, you went to UCLA, they're probably wondering, what does she major in? What does she do? Right? Yeah.
So it's a great question, and one that we have a conversation about this at the dinner table almost every day. And I would say, and I remind my children how privileged they are to grow up in a city that has one of the greatest tree canopies in Southern California, and that has wide sidewalks, and that we walk to our park almost every day with our two dogs, and that public safety is one of many issues you wrangle with, but not an issue that has you on your toes every day. And so when I speak to my children and my husband about urban planning, I explain to them, you know, we travel a lot. I should say, like, preface this, that my husband is an immigrant from Spain. And so we get to travel to see his family. And there's a lot of conversation about how cities are built and what cities mean to people and how walkable they are and how people live their life in the housing styles of, say, Europe versus the housing and homes of Southern California that are very, I would say, you know, single family units with grass in the front, sidewalks, and not having lots of civic centers. So my children actually talk a lot about the comparisons of, say, a small city with a city center and a culture that thrives on walking and getting to know people and sort of visiting different, meeting your daily needs by walking down and getting your bread or your fruit, or having food with people outside, just a lot of outdoor living versus the way we live in Southern California. And I parlay that into, that is city planning. If you notice where the train station is, do you ever ride the train in Los Angeles? Not as much from Whittier. Obviously, they know that I fly up and down the state for my job. And so we're aware of what airports mean to cities and how they're both a benefit as well as an environmental nuisance for those who are right adjacent to airports. So we have a lot of conversations of what cities are about. And while I'm not trying to influence them to become architects or urban planners, I think there's a lot of conversations about zoning, where things belong, where, you know, what it means to be a person growing up in a privileged environment that has good environmental resources and also stepping into spaces that maybe I lived in when I was young. And the questions become, Mom, why aren't there a lot of trees on the sidewalk? Why are the sidewalks so narrow? Have you noticed if I were on my scooter or my skateboard, my skateboard would flip because all of the sidewalks are broken. So I think they're very in tune with the public space and the communal space because they're privileged enough to get to see cities in the United States, abroad, and they've traveled quite a bit in the United States as well. So I try to create that awareness because I don't want them to grow up thinking that their little town is what everything looks like.
Geez. And, you know, I think for a lot of us, you know, I think a lot of us grew up questioning our environments, right? And now that we, you know, obviously have come to grow within the profession, a lot of us look back at those formative years in college where we thought, oh, I've thought about this my whole life. And now there's a whole urban planning field or urban design or built environment concentration that I could specialize in. And it just seems like a lot of us, you know, when you think back, you think, wow, I had like a little urban planner in me, you know, this whole time. And, you know, and I'm just thinking back, I know that you've held various positions as Ana Vidal was reading your excellent bio. And, you know, I'm just curious, how have you like navigated, you know, trying to balance, right? Like going from one position to the next, how is it that you have tried to like successfully navigate whether, you know, it was a political situation with, you had to navigate with diplomacy and balance different perspectives because you are planning for multiple publics, right? A lot of the projects that you mentioned are important to the Latino community. And at large, it's a benefit to multiple publics living in this, in cities, living in the state. And I'm just wondering, you know, if maybe you could think about one situation where you've had to successfully navigate a lot of these nuances. I think we would love to learn more about that.
Sure, absolutely. I look at every day as a negotiation of sorts, and not in the vein of I negotiate every step I take. It's more so that everyone comes to the table with a purpose and a goal for their position. You know, they're representing either the city, the nonprofit, the private sector, an individual, a neighborhood council. I can go on and on and on, right? Ultimately, as human beings, we all have our own story, our own narrative, our own perspective of what drives us and why we do what we do. And I'm very cognizant of each individual's why. I mentioned mine. I was touched at the age of 7 when I saw the 1984 Olympics. I call that my seminal moment that launched me into the love of architecture, cities, and urban planning. But everyone comes to the table with their own story. We also come to problems with, I think, a mindset of solving them or a mindset of getting to a certain goal, whether it's solving it or depending on what aspect you have, perhaps ratcheting it back or slowing it down. So I think the first thing I do when I am in the room where the decisions are made, is try to take the pulse of the room, read the room. What are people trying to achieve? And I bring a lot of humility to the table. I would say as a public servant, humility is one of my biggest assets. I don't have a very big ego when it comes to those boardrooms. And I've been told I kind of lead with a collaborative hat or a collaborative mindset. Many times I've sat across the table with people who have very politically diverse and I would say even opposing views to mine. But lo and behold, they want the same thing. They want the same park. They want it to be safe. They want a good school. They want it to be great. They want a great stadium. They want it to be important and, you know, create jobs and create revenue for not only their neighborhood, but for the owners. So whatever the project is, I've found many times, even if we have a different path to the solution, we all are solving towards something. So it's a matter of being humble, hanging my ego at the door, and seeing how we could solve it together. It doesn't get solved in a meeting. I am a firm believer of getting to know people and, you know, trying to figure out a time, a schedule of when we need a time-bound sort of goal to get something done. I also think if you let things fester for too long, people lose interest, and then nothing gets done. So I am a community builder and I am known to get projects out of the ground, but I think a lot of it has to do with my approach to understanding everyone's perspective.
Thank you for highlighting some of the skill sets or some of the kind of tips, right? That a lot of us try to think about, like, what's in my toolbox when I'm in a situation like this. And I think a lot of the pointers that you talk about are translatable to any situation, right? We could be in a workplace meeting. Maybe we're directing a meeting or we're trying to do a presentation with our colleagues. And here we go. We have to negotiate, practice empathy, try to understand where the other person is coming from. And at the end of the day, as a leader and a manager, you know, focusing on what is our common goal. And it seems like you try to like expand on those strategies, right? As you're navigating or trying to successfully maybe just listen. Sometimes listening first, right? It's such a critical advice tip. And I'm wondering, Ana Vidal, do you have any other questions? Because I've been talking a lot, but I'm just wondering, as Ana Maria Lasso has been talking, I'm sure you've been thinking, wow, I want to ask a question. I want to ask Ana about this and that. So please go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to know, how did you get to these positions that you had? What were your experiences so that you could get to the position that you are right now and to be the director of an organization? Mm-hmm. What did it take to get to your position?
That's a great question, Ana, because I've asked myself that question as well. And I will touch upon something that I think a lot of us think about, but we put under the rug because we don't really want to talk about it. There's a lot of imposter syndrome that we struggle with often as Latinas. And so this particular podcast is very important to sort of demystify not having that imposter syndrome. I'm very hardworking. I meet my timelines or my schedule. And as I said, I'm a community builder of sorts when it comes to negotiating very tough, complicated deals. So the first thing I would say is I read everything. I don't trust to let other people just give me advice and say, okay, just sign here. I read everything. My staff has learned, even when I worked at LA Unified, I'll read everything. I learn every skill set, meaning I may be the project manager or the program manager, but I will go onto a construction site and like walk in the shoes of the people who are doing the construction. I will sit with the estimator and I'm not trying to take their job. I say that from the get-go. I'm not trying to do your job. I just want to understand what you go through to achieve your job, so that when I have to explain why the estimate is up or down, why the construction has extra rainy days now that we have more rain or more inclement weather, why the budget may have gone under or over, why it's better to do design build versus design bid build or vice versa. Whatever it is, I am a firm believer of getting to know everyone on my team and living a day in their life. When I moved from LA Unified, which was very heavy on the construction management, project management, and program management, which I did all three, and went into the world of managing Exposition Park, my roles flipped, right? I went from technical skill sets that were really great and set me up for a wonderful foundation to understand projects. And then suddenly I was doing operations, which I will say, and I was the first one to note, not my forte. Plus, I was also managing public safety, I don't have a public safety background. So what was the first thing I did? I asked my public safety team and my California Highway Patrol team, can I do ride-alongs? Can I understand the language and lingo that you use? Can I understand the laws by which you're enforcing? I don't mean to become a law enforcement individual or peace officer. I just need to understand, if you report to me, what all of this means. And it's that humility of stepping in people's shoes. Then I get to DGS, and I know I'm being roundabout on this, but I get to DGS and I have actually now about 3,900 employees, getting to 4,000. We're just growing and filling our vacancies. And one of my largest divisions is our facilities management division. We manage all the state buildings, office buildings, and many others that are leased. So I have a large janitorial staff. And early on, I said, I'm going to be a janitor for a day, and I will be a groundskeeper. So I went out with my team and I figured out how they do leaf blowing and how they clean our offices. And you might thinking, why would the director ever get down to clean elevators and bathrooms and doing leaf blowing at the state capitol? Because I want to understand how heavy their packs are when they have to do leaf blowing, what kind of chemicals they're using, or, you know, if we're providing them with clean chemicals to clean our buildings, and see if we are providing them the right tools. Getting into the roles has allowed me to be very human-centered and a human-centered leader. And I think that human-centered approach, which is understanding those who report to me, has propelled me in my career. A lot of folks will say, I want to work for Director Lasso because I see my team. I work with my team. If they tell me there's a problem, I'll go to them. So perhaps it's that. Perhaps it's that I lead with a human-centered philosophy, and it's been noticed. Plus, I read everything, and I get my work completed, and I stand by my word. So I'm not someone that will tell you we're gonna overshoot and under deliver. I really try to manage expectations and come through for people.
Well, thank you for answering that so candidly, Anna. And I'm just wondering, as you're coming through and delivering for your teams and for your work, and this might be a tough question, but I would just love to know, you know, how do you practice self-care and just trying to make sure that, you know, you're also good to yourself, right? A lot of us, besides imposter syndrome and being great leaders and great managers and great supervisors, there's this delicate balance, right, of showing up for your team, being there for your team, being supportive. And then how do you, in return, you know, lean on friends or your family, or there might be things that, you know, you do. We don't need to know all the little secrets, but I would love to know, like, if you could share some of those self-care tips, because I'm sure there's people listening right now thinking, wow, how does she get all this done? Right. And what kind of tips would you have for some of us that it's a daily struggle, right, to manage our expectations at our jobs and then manage expectations for ourselves while still having goals, right? And being goal oriented and being excited about our work. But yeah, how do you balance all that?
So I'll start off by saying self-care is incredibly important. You've got to make space for it. I'm not the best at it, but I'm working on it. So I'm a work in progress. Certain things in my toolkit for self-care, and this sounds a little bit, you know, just cliche, but my family, I love spending time with my husband and my kids. So one thing we do once a day, whether it's breakfast or dinner, we will have one meal that we all sit together and not on the go. That sort of fills my cup, being able to speak with my husband and the kids, even if it's 20 minutes, just having that touch point with the family. When I'm traveling, because I do travel a lot, every other week I'm on the road, I always carry podcasts with me. So happy to be on your podcast. Audible books, both like a fun Audible book and one that's work related that I can use, you know, anecdotes and learn to create a stronger team. And then I push myself, again, not consistently like every week, but at least once a week, I try to have a lunch or dinner or a cocktail with a colleague that's outside of my team. So these are building relationships with leaders, community leaders, nonprofit leaders, folks that call me, let's have, you know, let's get together, friends from college. Heidi, I'm just looking at you. One of these days I'll call you and say, let's meet up for lunch up here in Bunker Hill. So it is one of my talents, as well as probably something that takes away from self-care, is I keep in touch with a lot of people. I'm really good about like picking up the phone and calling someone I haven't talked to in ages. I'm like, hey, where are you these days? Let's either have a Zoom meeting or have, and it's, I'm an extrovert by nature, so I need to fill that energy pack. So that's my self-care. On the other side of the self-care, which I want to talk about because this is really important for Latinas, is that we wear so many hats. And while we are professionals, there's a lot of expectation, both from families, my parents, my nieces, my nephews, my own children, my husband, to wear more traditional roles, right? And I call myself a sandwich. I'm in the sandwich generation where I'm helping my elderly parents. I'm raising kids. I'm trying to go on dates with my husband. Is schedule. And maybe Heidi, you've known that my superpower since UCLA has been, I'm a whiz at putting together schedules. Like Sunday to Saturday, I know exactly like by half hours, and I am pretty good stickler, except for this morning, I couldn't control the traffic got in Los Angeles. So that was the 15 minute delay. But really being honest with myself, is this, can I really fit this in? And if I can't fit it in for the day, we'll postpone until we can. And also not over committing. I'm starting to be really good about not over committing. I can't go to every event, every, you know, family gathering, every concert. I love to scroll Instagram and see that some people get to do that. I'm okay with it. I pick and choose what I can go to. And when I'm there, I'm very present. Because otherwise, I've learned that being here but thinking of next week isn't healthy for the soul.
Yeah, and I think that a lot of us are work in progress, right? We're good. Like if somebody were to call me right now and ask me for advice, oh, I'm good. I'm like, look, you need to do X, Y, and Z. And then some of us need to practice that, right? The advice that we're given. But thank you for being so nimble and just, you know, open about some of the things that we deal with, right? And those are real expectations from family, from friends, maybe self-expectations. And we're like, what? Nobody's asking me to like do all this stuff. And why am I putting all this pressure on myself, right? So also just being gentle on showing ourselves grace, right?
Absolutely.
And being gentle and on ourselves. Well, you were talking on, I know you're mentioning a lot of the times where, you know, we were at UCLA together, you know, a while back, and we were director of mentorship projects. That's where I met Anna. And, you know, those are some lessons that I still carry very close to my heart. And only because I just recently went out to Boston for the first time, and I know you lived out there because you went to MIT. I'm just wondering, do you have any like favorite memories from your grad school days or anything that you just kind of always think about? I know from our UCLA days, there's certain things that we're like, oh yeah, like I always carry that in my heart and my brain. And I'm just wondering, you know, as a person who grew up in Huntington Park in the Southeast cities, went to UCLA, you went to Boston, you came back, and I know you've gone to other cities abroad. I'm just wondering, like, any fun memories from Boston or other places that you continue to carry with you as you move on with your career?
Yes, absolutely. So I haven't taken my kids to Cambridge and Boston yet, but that's on their bucket list. And my favorite part of living in Cambridge was the Charles River. My first year I lived on campus, graduate student housing called Tang Hall, and it was right on the river. And so I took advantage, as icy cold as it was in the fall and into the winter, to do what you do in Boston. People do a lot of outdoor sports and outdoor living. Again, kind of more of a European style living because it's such a dense city. So small living quarters, lots of living outside, and either taking runs on the Charles or I can't believe I did this, but I'm so glad I did. My first semester at MIT, I joined the rowing club. I'm a short woman, so I was a coxswain. But it gave me an opportunity to see what people do in Boston when you row and you see the Harvard crew and the MIT crew kind of passing each other on the Charles River. It was freezing cold, but I have a fond memory of that. My other very fond memory of Boston and Cambridge is riding the T. And so again, the juxtaposition of, as an urban planner, saying, wow, this is an incredible transit metro system where everything's connected, never owned a car there, never needed a car there. And then coming back to Los Angeles and doing my thesis on comparing Los Angeles to Chicago back 25 years ago, 22 years ago, the metro system was just sort of growing, and seeing that placemaking in certain stops where we had festivals then became the stops for metro. And that was sort of my prediction, like where people gather, what became the goal line, that's where they have the stops now. So that's really fun to think of how Boston influenced how I came back to work at Los Angeles, and also where we place the schools. So schools on the metro, schools where kids can use the metro to get to their, you know, from home to school. And I just have a big love for the East Coast, perhaps because the car isn't as needed over there. And one thing that we love here in Southern California, we love and we hate, we love our car, we hate the traffic, right? So I think those were great influences. I have promised my kids to take them to my school campuses. So when I took them this summer to UCLA to see my sister graduate, she, empty nester, went back and got her graduate degree in education. I took them by the CPO, the Community Programs Office, where Heidi and I met. And I told them about the importance of not only getting into great schools, but while you're in school, being of service and doing public service and giving back to your communities. So they saw where all of the nonprofits were, took them to Campbell Hall. And I did say this summer, we're heading to Boston and I'll show them 77 Mass Ave, take them to Harvard Square, and they'll get to ride on the T.
That is so fascinating. And I'm so like excited for your trip this summer. And I just got goosebumps as you were talking about the Community Programs Office, because we were all students and we were mentoring and working in the community and trying to balance college life and work and everything. And, you know, it's just, we've all come such a long way. And I'm just so proud to call you our colleague. I'm so honored that Ana Vidal and myself have had this opportunity to interview you. And as we're getting just a little bit closer to the conclusion of the interview, I'm just wondering, as you're kind of remembering some of these key moments or challenging moments or moments that left a footprint in your heart, I'm just wondering, you know, are there any maybe tips or pieces of advice that maybe you wish you would have known about or had been told maybe when you were just starting? I know that you've always been very motivated, very goal oriented, right? But I'm just wondering now, as you look back, you know, through different stages of your career and your life, and I'm just wondering, you know, for the people that are listening that are maybe just starting, or maybe they're undecided, undeclared, and they're looking at urban planning, or they're about to graduate from grad school, you know, what types of advice do you think would have helped you, or things that you wish you would have known?
Sure, absolutely. Hindsight's always 20/20. Even in the last 10 years, if I could redo certain things and think of how to navigate, one is pause. Put a pause in whatever decision you're trying to make. Don't force a situation. One thing I learned from one of a great board member, he taught me to sleep on it, sleep on the decision. Are you sure you want to hit send on that particular email? Right? So I know for a lot of us, and you, and for those that are coming into the field, you will get very passionate about a project and you might kind of blow a fuse here and there or really want to defend something. And how you write emails, especially in now that we do a lot of virtual meetings and you know, email traffic, be brief, be factual. And if you're worried about hitting send, don't sleep on it. That's a huge one. And I think that has taken me a long way. Right in bullet points, if I could give anyone an advice of how to handle your kind of professional communication, right in bullet points, just the facts. Just don't try to add your point of view. Again, remember that everyone brings their point of view to the table, and your point of view may not be someone else's. And then a tip I learned along the way was take time to meet your people or colleagues or others in your field. And one thing I've been practicing for every position I've had is once it's time to move on, because I think that that's important. I'm going to say this. My philosophy is, as public servants, we are of service, not the other way around. This is not about what's in it for me. It's about how do I bring my talents to the table and am of service to others. So when your work is done, when you go in and you say, hey, these were my goals, I've met my goals, I've achieved what I wanted to achieve, do a check. Check yourself. Are you staying because you're cruising, or is it time to move on? And I think in public service, there always comes a point where if you achieve what you set out to do, it's time to open the door for someone else to come in and bring their point of view and maybe exit stage left and do something else.
Is there anything that you would like to add that we haven't asked?
Well, I would think right now, as folks are coming into the field, I think one thing we need to be really focused on, and I know that we are, but just looking ahead as urban planners, as stewards of our environment, to be focused on climate change. Anything that we do needs to have sort of that, in my opinion. My perspective today is we have to be resilient and be thoughtful and work on projects that are going to protect our environment and or help heal it.
Our last question is a fun one. If you were going to have a churro y chocolate, what flavor churro would you prefer? Or do you have a favorite pan dulce that you love to enjoy?
Oh, yes. I love pan dulce with the yellow top. I know that they all taste the same, but I like the yellow one the best. And I like the churros with the chocolate de España, though, the really thick chocolate. So that's the difference. And they're not as sweet. They're a little bit smaller, but the chocolate's very thick. So those would be my two choices. But a yellow concha and churro con chocolate de España.
Yeah, I've been to Spain, and I had the churros and chocolate, and they are very good. And
it's different,
the chocolate,
right?
It's so thick, yeah.
Very thick, yeah. But the churro isn't as sweet, if you right?
That's right. Yeah.
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 But my favorite is my concha María.
Oh.
Well, we want to thank you. We want to thank our guest, Ana María, for joining us on this podcast. And to learn more about her story and find other episodes of Plan Dulce, you can find it on Anchor, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts.
And thank you again. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. And Ana, this is just such an honor to reconnect with you in this platform. So thank you.
Yes. Yes. We'll connect, Heidi. And we'll follow up on that picture.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
With Leo.
Yes.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you.